Judy, ganz genau.
That's the end of the talk, right? Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Shall I start? Or do you want to start?
Well, just first of all, thanks for coming. That's the main. It's great that you're all here, because I don't think we'll be here doing this again in the future. But so that's really fantastic that you all got on the bus and came here. So for me personally, that's great. So thanks for that.
Can you hear me now? Yeah. All right. So we're here to talk about a new piece, a portfolio of prints by Anthony, which is a striking kind of physical object. It's produced in this rather luscious red box, and you open it up and you see red ribbons and black covering a card. On the box is written the title, Eat Bitterness, and once you sort of get inside and start looking at the prints, you see that in contrast to this rather luxurious presentation, they show scenes of considerable dereliction, of filth, staining, spattering, erasure, and so on. But I first wanted to, or maybe you could show one actually, that might be an idea. Do you want to do that?
Yeah, can do.
And on the screen, perhaps, we can. Just cycle through.
Do you put the images on?
Yeah, okay. Get one of those up. So here's a box. You can come and take a look at that in a bit.
Maybe get a different image. Okay.
Right. So first to ask you about the title, Eat Bitterness. I know it's a phrase, but what does it mean?
Well, Eat Bitterness is a translated Chinese phrase. And Eat Bitterness, the reason I use that title is trying to point to a history of... we should acknowledge that the photographs are taken in a place called China. And of course, within this box of images, you wouldn't necessarily see that. And we're in the work, trying to actually keep that sense of where it is veiled, I suppose. Mm. Because I didn't want to really get into that whole idea of where are these photographs from. So Eat Bitterness is pointing to this sense that it is China and the history of China. And the sense of Eat Bitterness is, as a nation, you were supposed to endure hardship for the good of the nation. So therefore, they went through the Cultural Revolution, Tiananmen Square, one-child policy, and things like this, social things and political things. And trying to point towards that and give the image, the work, some context and some subtext, really. So kind of using that. But now, of course, Eat Bitterness, now in modern-day China, has been kind of used to as an admirable spirit that, as a new entrepreneur, you can, you may endure some hardships, but, of course, you're always going to make some money and be a new man or a new woman. So it's that sense, yeah.
Yeah. So it's shifted from being a kind of state-imposed thing, which... it would benefit future generations onto being a sort of a thing
individual,
about your own entrepreneurial success.
Yeah, as a generalisation, yeah.
Yeah. And let's talk about the sort of textual elements here, because you... you could bring those up too. There's a newspaper, whereas you can see there are various sort of erasures. So, again, to blank out all mention of place, right?
That's right.
And then there's a quote from Umberto Eco about, fundamental misidentifications of, for instance, unicorns for rhinoceroses.
Yeah.
How does this relate to... I mean, tell us more about that kind of, veiling of your intention and veiling of place and the way that these texts relate to your pictures.
I think with the text, this text especially, some sense of playfulness and trying to also maybe... It's also about my own history with photography and my sense of going to another place and being a tourist in that place and an outsider. And about the things that you see before you, which of course have been played in your mind many times before by the images or the imagery coming out or about that place. And I guess I wanted to use this particular quote to try and put you in that position where maybe you should reconfigure or rethink your own perceptions, which could be preconceived by media or other types of places and works. In terms of the actual, this piece here, this is from a Financial Times article which I found on the tube, maybe about 10 years ago. And I always kept it, because I wanted to do something with it at some point. And it's about China, so the whole thing is about the modernization of China. And I've, kind of crossed out those references to place. And it does mention one particular place in the north of China, which drove the project in the end. And in fact, that was the whole reason for going to China, to go to this one place and to kind of do a collaboration with other people in China around this place. Of course, the logistics of it and the actuality of going to China completely blew out of the water all of those, all of that planning. So the thing is, you can never plan precisely what's going to happen, especially when you go to a different place. And so I was left on my own, really, in this, or in Shanghai. Although Shanghai wasn't the original kind of target, it was another place north of Shanghai. And I was left in Shanghai trying to make sense of, well, actually, I'm here now. I've been here for 2 weeks. And the whole point of being here is kind of being missed. But then I had to rethink and re-go over, actually, well, what is my own history in China? Because I've been there since 1989, maybe about 10 times. And I've seen it change a lot. And actually, and just think about that and think about my own positioning as a photographer and also culturally and also about my history there. There's a certain problematics within that as a photographer. There's problematics for me culturally. And I think when it comes down to it, in the end, I always felt that we're always outside of all of those things.
Can you say a bit more about that? I mean, what does it feel like to take pictures in Shanghai and to take these pictures in Shanghai? How do you relate to that place? Linguistically, culturally, and in your activity as a photographer?
Well, Shanghai, the reason, I mean, Mark's mentioned, we had a conversation, and then there was this residency, artist residency in Shanghai. And for me, the whole point of being in Shanghai was just as a base for me to go to this other place, which is about 2,000 kilometres from Shanghai. The fact that I ended up being in Shanghai and making this body of work called Eat Bitterness is kind of quite ironic, actually.
Right. It's your own business as well. Not getting to the other place.
Yeah, well, actually, when I went to this other place, it was actually quite a uninteresting place. And it was actually it was a kind of post-industrial new town, which had a lot of history to it, but actually, as a visitor there, there wasn't actually much to see, whatever that means. But it was quite interesting. It was interesting to go to because it happened after I'd done the photography in Shanghai. And so what was interesting, it actually gave me space to think about the images made in Shanghai.
Right.
And to see whether they actually made any sense with the whole point of being in China. In Shanghai, Shanghai I'd never really been that interested to go to. For me, in China, I was more interested in going to the interior, to go into the northwest of China, the southwest. I've been to Beijing a few times before, and I'm not really interested in this whole idea of the new China, the new cities, the whole point of China being this new superpower and whatever comes with that. So in Shanghai, I had to find some reason for being there. And I guess the work that I did end up making kind of resonates with me around some of the issues I have about this imaging of China.
Well, sure, and there's a sort of dramatic contrast between the economic boosterism of the Financial Times clipping and your images, which, except for the very last one, are absolutely about places where, that kind of wave of economic regeneration haven't reached.
Although in amongst the regeneration, I would say.
Right.
Because, of course, China, there's this communist slogan that China reconstructs. And within this Financial Times article, it mentions it, and of course, it also says that China reverts to type. And there's this sense that... And when I was in this other place, not Shanghai, but this other place, what's interesting is, having been to China quite a few times, is that it seems, seemingly from the outside, it seems as if it, and it is, modernising, and all these things are happening at a very fast pace, very rapid. And yet, of course, there's this sense that there's a lot of coverage, there's a lot of slippage between the old and the new. And when I went to this hotel in this other place, it's funny, I arrived at 12:30, and when I woke up in the morning, I came down the stairwell, and interestingly, at the first flight of stairs in this stairwell were completely new, tiled over, looking very clean and modern. And of course, what you find, but all the other stair threads above the first flight were completely bare concrete.
Right.
And it was as if this was, in some sense, the old and the new. And as if there was this sense that, you know, we project a certain image to those outside, but of course, we have our own image of ourselves.
Mm.
And that was kind of interesting to see that. And it's always been interesting for me to, when I keep going back, that things seemingly change, and they are changing. But of course, how do I relate to that? And what is the change within my relationship?
Yeah.
And I guess this set of photographs is kind of showing that as well, and reflecting somewhat on that.
It's very interesting in terms of thinking about going to nations which are recently capitalist. Mm-hmm. If one goes to Moscow now, for instance, you know, you see many of those old 1960s, 1970s massive Soviet, you know, apartment blocks, mm-hmm. and the same wide avenues and the same bleakness, basically, but with a few, you know, on the outskirts anyway, with a few sort of little bits of neon on the front as a sort of veneer. And there's very much that sort of feeling. Or travelling in Eastern Europe soon after the wall came down, that these sort of apparatus of commercialisation is sort of beginning to move in, but it always seems to be done in a very provisional and sort of cack-handed manner.
Mm.
And it's almost a kind of education in a way in the evolving of capitalist aesthetics or something of that sort.
It doesn't seem planned. It seems like the people on the ground get in the way, which is quite interesting.
Yeah.
And I found that in Shanghai, actually, that although supposedly the last 10 years it's built, you know, I don't know, 5,000 skyscrapers or something like that, something ridiculous, and yet when you're on the ground you don't necessarily feel that. It's only when you're in a car or going through, because of course their roadway, some are elevated, it's only that's when you start feeling it, or you go on the fastest train in the world, it's when you really realise it. But of course when you're on the fastest train in the world going to the airport, which takes 8 minutes from the centre to the airport, which takes an hour in the car, you're looking down and you're seeing all these paddy fields. So it's that kind of contrast and that strangeness, that weird thing that things are happening and yet the people's kind of part of it and not part of it.
Mm. There's something that Frederick Jameson talks about, actually, which I don't think he mentions China, but I always think of it when I read this, which is to do with the idea of... it's partly to do with the idea of combined and uneven development, that obviously a nation like China and its move into a strange form of capitalist economy doesn't follow through all the stages that, you know, England did in the Industrial Revolution, but just, you know, jumped straight over into the present. So you have the most modern, hyper-modern elements, the, you know, extraordinary postmodern office blocks, but literally overlooking these scenes of agricultural scenes which haven't changed, you know, for 1,000 years or more.
Mm.
And what Jameson says about that kind of contrast is that it encourages a form of totalizing thinking.
Yeah.
So a systematic thinking, often he would say a Marxist thinking too.
Mm.
And it's those very contrasts and education really in different historical epochs being pushed together that brings about that thinking. But your project seems very unlike that, in a sense. It's it's fragmentary, it's in a sense, in many ways, sort of refuses meaning, refuses the building up of pictures into... I mean, the series is very important here, right? I mean,
that's right, They're a grouping.
Yeah.
They're not individuals.
Yeah.
It's much a grouping.
Yeah, so the grouping is very important. But
very important that it's within itself, unto itself.
Right. But is it right to say that it doesn't build up in the way, a kind of Rodchenko photo story would, or something like that, into a sort of coherent image of the world, but rather something which is questioning that coherence?
Yeah, I mean, there's a sense of a broken narrative, you know, you have to impose your own narrative on it. And also, it reflects the way the photography was as well. I mean, the actual imagery, It's interesting. Coming from a background where photojournalism was my thing many years ago, it was always a problematic for me how to represent something else or someone else. And so this set of work is kind of acknowledging that. I mean, there's problematics within it. And also the sense that it is a grouping, and yet, you know, I don't know. I mean, this image, for instance, you know, this image is quite interesting in one way. And there's a series of, when you look through the box, the first three images are these ones. And then, of course, what comes to mind is that they're red. There's red in them. And then you think about China. And that wasn't planned, of course, but, you know, it's kind of happened through the process. And it's kind of interesting. I'm kind of not answering your question.
Well, a kind of couple of things that come out of that. I mean, one's to do with your relationship to conceptual photography, I suppose. And, I mean, partly because it's been on display recently at the Barbican, I particularly think of Mikhailov's series Red, where he, you know, turns the idea of the communist red into all sorts of weird and sometimes perverse uses. Mm. Is there something of that you feel going on here?
Possibly. Taking the photographs and doing the photography and doing the process of making the box, the whole process, it's been interesting because it's something that's, if you look at some of my past work, it's very different. And in fact, that's quite an important thing, because things are very different. Because it is about an evolving practice, and it's about trying to challenge that practice, and trying to challenge my own interaction with photography and what that means. Mm. I don't know about that. Whether that relates to that or not.
I mean, the other thing I wanted to ask you was, there's one sort of striking narrative moment in here, which is with the last image. Because having gone through these various images, as I say, of filth and erasure and so on, we get to finally a piece of clean modernity with perhaps slight relief, something which is. It could be anywhere, of course, this image. All of them, in fact, really.
You could
almost find in England somewhere.
That's right.
Yeah. But nevertheless, this piece seems to, you know, it certainly sits in contrast with the others. Mm. So I just wonder if you could talk about that narrative break.
Yeah, I mean, of course, there's that sense that there is no, you know, as you're saying, there's not necessarily a narrative which kind of goes from A to B to C to D within the set. And of course, but at the end, there's like this punchline,
right?
This full stop, which then maybe you have to makes you think, well, maybe I should go back and go through the images again, because of course, looking through the images, you start to think, well, all, as you said, they're all of things that are degrading, they're all of material that's maybe been discarded. You know, what does this all mean? Mm-hmm. And then towards the end, you get this punchline, or you get a full stop, and then maybe it's about going back, reconfiguring, remaking. The idea or the set, and trying to work it out. And of course, the whole point is it is quite ambiguous.
Mm. So we shouldn't see this final image of a rather kind of clean and sanitized modernity as a full stop, as a final destination. Then.
You could see it that way. I mean, I think the whole thing about photography for me is that I'm not trying to be disingenuous, but it is you bring what you want to it, and for me. That's interesting. I'm always interested in what people think about photography. Not necessarily my photography, but just about photography and how they read it.
Mm.
And, you know, it's different levels. It could be just about the image, the descriptive power of the image. And, of course, I was interested in that as well. But, I mean, I was interested in that. And yet, at the same time, perversely, I used a compact camera for this work.
Right.
Because I wanted to kind of have that mobility. And I also want to have that sense of being able to really be quite close up to the things I was photographing, to have that proximity, and yet, of course, acknowledging that my relationship with that place is very distant. And I kind of wanted to use that. And so I found that kind of camera work enabled me to do that, which was interesting for me.
So you think that if you were using a larger camera, it would have given more sort of, stagey and formal results, which would have
Yeah, I don't want to get into FDOP, but yeah.
Okay. Right.
No, but probably. Yeah. I think maybe it would have. In fact, this time I did take three cameras.
Mm.
One was a cine camera, one was a compact camera, one was a medium format camera, and I never used a medium format camera at all because it wasn't right for that space. That would have been something else.
Mm. Sort of brings us to issues of style in a way, and I mean certainly people who are familiar with your earlier work, perhaps particularly Notes from the Street of 1995, although it's far from being an entirely sort of straight or typical piece of documentary photography, and you know there are already signs I think there that you can see of you playing with an idea of lack of visibility sometimes, or not showing you things as well as revealing things. In relationship to these Bangladeshi young men, obviously, that you were photographing and reporting the statements of. But nonetheless, the style is there, was a fairly straightforward black and white documentary style.
Mm.
And this seems to be closer, if anything, to a sort of kind of rather begrimed William Eggleston or something of that sort. I was wondering if you could talk about that shift.
I mean, I think the shift, the Notes from the Street was 95 when it came out, but the actual photography is 93.
Right.
And of course, that sense of, and that work was very much about these young people who felt very marginalised on the edges.
Mm.
And in some sense, it was the back view of a part of London. And in that sense, there's some similarity with this new body of work because it is also a back view. It's not a front view. It's not the centred view. It's a decentered view.
Right.
And I think that kind of pervades through some of my work, but the sense that I don't want to show... I don't want you to be there slap bang in the middle of the action. It's kind of trying to seep out towards the edges.
Mm.
And that, of course, comes from my own... Well, my own background, my own interests. I'm not so sure it's driven by the photography. The photography is a reaction to those social interests, I think.
Right.
And then, of course, the camera becomes the tool to make the work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the really important part, I think, is the social aspect of the work and what it's trying to show. And whether it's showing it through the title, so Eat Bitterness, pointing towards the history, or whether it's showing it through the actual images or through some text, because some previous works have had text as well. And in fact... With this series of work, there's a sense that I want to actually add to the body of work, but something very different, and much more about the rural.
Right.
And in fact, about a journey from the rural to the urban.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe doing something about the pastoral aspect of China. I'm doing a pastiche on it, and the views will be much more open. And there'll be a broken narrative again, but the narrative may actually be conversations with some peasants in China.
Yeah. That's interesting because there seems to be an anti-pastoral thing going on here, particularly in the erasure of that, or partial erasure of a landscape painting in one of these pictures. And you don't depict people here, although you have done in China or at least in Hong Kong before. And is that to do with the difficulty of depicting? An other, or someone who is at least, you know, has inevitably some cultural distance from you, or how would you see that?
Yeah, I mean, I think with this body of work, it's funny. During the process of making this work, I actually forced myself to go to the train station in Shanghai, and spend an afternoon photographing people.
Mm.
Which, for those that know some of my previous work, or actually as my history as a photographer, you know, I have photographed a lot of people.
Yeah.
Actually, it was really strange because after having photographed most of this body of work, forcing myself to go to the train station and photograph people for an afternoon, I actually stopped doing it, and it felt really wrong for that time.
Can you say why?
Because it wasn't really what I wanted to do. It wasn't really what I wanted to represent or explore. And it felt I'd done it before, previously.
Right.
And I had many of those kind of pictures previously. I just haven't shown them.
Mm.
And they're not necessarily images for showing either. They're just in my own image bank.
Right.
And in fact, what's interesting about my own photography is that a lot of my images are just there somewhere in my home. And they've been part of the process, but it's not necessary to show them. And I think photography is a weird one, because, you know, obviously a photograph is for looking at. And yet, of course, I have like thousands of pictures which I either don't develop as print or just don't show.
Yeah, I mean, it's often the case, though, that images hang around for a long time until find out what it is that you want to do with them.
Yeah. Mm. But yeah, I mean, going back to the people thing, I mean, it wasn't right for that time. And going back to the work in Hong Kong headspace, I mean, that series of images primarily were photographs of strangers in the street, which was trying to answer my own question about my own sense of identity in Hong Kong and my father coming from that place.
Yeah. But also talking about, you know, using a compact camera here and that somehow working against your feeling of distance from Shanghai.
Yeah.
There you used a longer lens, I guess, to put yourself in a sort of false proximity with these people and to capture some quite strange sort of passing expressions on their faces. So is that another play, photographic play with...
Yeah, I mean, it was trying out that sense of intimate, being in the same space and yet being very distant from it.
Mm.
And seeing what happened, really, and spending 2 weeks on one street corner.
Right.
You know, between 2 and 5 every afternoon. And that's how that series of work came about. Mm. Of course, it got added to with images of buildings and stuff. But
yeah.
So
did people start to recognise you and to talk to you in that place? I mean, did you find yourself...
In Hong Kong?
Yeah, getting any closer on that street corner? After
No. I mean, I always kept myself very separate. I mean, I mean, there's a tension within... For me, and probably for most people taking photographs, there's always a tension. And the tension always is unanswered. You know, it's being there and doing whatever you decide you want to do. But of course, the reason I'm there is because there's this sense of tension as an answer to kind of process through. And I think that's why I keep going back to making images. It's not that I enjoy that tension, but it's just interesting. It's an interesting space to be in. And of course, photography should evoke that space. So, yeah.
Mm. Okay. There's a resistance to pastoral here, as we discussed, and that's actually true of some of your other projects, too, like Port of Call, for instance, where you place captions taken from a white paper on the integration of Muslims into Britain over some British, both urban and landscape scenes, as I remember.
Yeah.
And there is certainly a resistance here of any kind of exoticism, and indeed these things seem very placeless in certain ways. Although, as you say, you were a tourist of sorts.
Yeah.
What do you think the effect is? I mean, maybe you don't want to specify any more than to say that people make different things of photographs. But do you think you can say any more about what you think? What you thought the effect would be on the viewer to as they work through this grouping?
It's interesting. I mean, actually, you know, I haven't really... apart from working with Mark, for instance, there's not many people who have actually seen this body of work. So... And actually, when I made the body of work, we had this plan, you know, it was a residency, went over there, made the work, processed the work over there, came back, you know, showed Mark, had conversations, developed the work. It's still, to me, still a problematic of actually the work itself, the images.
Mm.
Because I think that whole thing you were talking about, are they individual images or are they grouping? As a photographer or someone who appreciates photography, there's always that sense that you love the individual image.
Mm-hmm.
And yet with this body work, you can't, you know, the whole point is, for me, is to try to get to grips with the whole set of images and not just stick on one image all the time.
Right.
And to kind of go against that aesthetic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, they're not exotic, and yet there are an exotica of a type. And they're kind of fetishizing, maybe, of this kind of sense of destruction.
Hmm. Well, that, I mean, you know, one of the things that occurred to me, certainly, as I was looking through, was that this sort of sense of a kind of heavy entropy, and which is sort of placed over the world, and of these things being, in a sense, a consequence of neglect, but also rapid change, as you say. There's that kind of the two are bound up almost dialectically, which is related to the creative destruction of capitalism, which is felt everywhere, but you know, very obviously, very abruptly and with great urgency in China. But nevertheless, it points to something quite universal, something that we all experience in some sense. Mm. Maybe it's just me wanting to find some form of more stable and universal meaning in these, and that's my own kind of kink or fetish. Mm. But I don't know whether you have any response to that.
I don't know. I'm kind of you know. I mean, they are very universal, and there is that sense that, of course, most of these things are things that have been left behind or seemingly left behind within the process of of say modernization. Of course, there's that other sense that, as individuals, we don't necessarily want to be left behind. We want to be part of a grouping. We want to be seen to be part of the fabric of society, whatever that means. Mm. And I don't know whether they stand for that or not. They could stand. Yeah, I guess one reading maybe.
Okay, well there you are, there's one. perhaps a final question before we throw it open to people in the audience. The portfolio itself is very cagey about. You've seen the textual support that it has, cagey about your intentions, about the place, and so on. And you've now spilt the beans. So what effect do you think that has, and why have you done that?
I mean, I think with anything, once you've made something, you need to get it out there. So. And it's true, we actually could have decided not to launch it, but actually to let people know it's there. Or maybe even just posted it to people without just nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been interesting. But how you, not monitor, but how you kind of get any sense of feedback or any sense of, well, what does that actually mean? Because to me, you know, if actually someone had this, and then they gave it to their friend, and then their friend gave it to someone else, I'm quite happy with that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it could become a kind of a form of elaborate nail art, rather luxurious nail art.
It could be. And when we first were thinking about how do we actually process this work, what do we do with it, their first thinking was to make this oversized postcard, which we, you know, really large.
Right.
Ridiculously large, so that people would it'll be sent to people, they'd have to go to the post, go and collect it for the post, because you know, one of those cards you were out, you have to go and put it. And they would go there, make a special effort, think, oh, this is great. And then they would just be confronted with this large, oversized postcard of what? From who?
Mm.
And that was our original idea.
Interesting. Cool.
And then we went and we made this. So maybe we were wrong in the end.
I'm sure there'll be many people who still approach this and experience its sort of its full sense of obscurity. But perhaps we should ask if anyone wants to talk to us.
Questions. My voice is loud enough to kind of boom. The first is that, you know, you kind of hovered around the conceptual nature of the project. And actually, you have developed a conception within that project. There's no doubt about that. In some cases, it's very didactic. Mm. But this leads me to my second question, which is, I think, the question that Mark has just raised, is that the project is so process-orientated that it's embedded both with process and conceptualism at the same time. Mm. And you've actually been punctuating your answers by using the word process as well, ironically, at the same time. But I wanted to say more about, is that the idea that your work has become so process-oriented, and that the point where you came in terms of making this work had to kind of, in some ways, mind your process in relation to that? And Mark was just saying, thank God, this work is just so kind of process-orientated in relation to that at the same time. I just wanted to say a bit more about that, if that's how you kind of approach it, as to how...
I think we always approach... When I say we, I mean... in conversation with Mark, it was always an open piece of work. And that was the point, that it would never necessarily be resolved. And of course it has been resolved, there's a, you know, it's a box there. But to me it's not resolved. And in fact, you know, I want to continue something with this idea, but not necessarily the same idea. And it doesn't matter whether we do it now, because this body of work is, in terms of the actual photography, it's 2.5 years old. It doesn't matter if in 10 years' time the next thing comes out. It's not really that important in terms of time.
Yeah.
It's the process. And the whole point was to be open and not prescriptive.
Exactly.
And that was the really important thing about the whole thing, the whole project thing.
Yes, because once you immerse yourself in the process, then notions of time, notions of context, notions of all those things become outplayed in a different context
than you
just described.
Yeah.
Thanks, Anthony and Julian. I just wanted to ask a little bit more about the format and what, Anthony, you might hope for in the way of an experience of the work, and whether or not you consider it only as something that might be experienced through holding the images and going through the images one by one in a very particular order, or whether you can imagine showing the work in any other way.
I mean, with the box, there is a particular order, and in fact, that's how you should experience it, and it is in the box. And I think that's quite important. It's quite intimate. It's a one-to-one with the prints and you as the viewer. And also it's quite important that they're small, but they're not these large-scale prints on the wall necessarily, or could be on the wall. But it's, I think it reflects that whole sense of journeying, and there's the passage of time and going through the images and maybe flipping back, but always ending up at the same point. And that whole, when I was in China, that whole sense that, you know, I was there, but I could have been anywhere. There's that whole sense also of the images, you know. As a tourist, and as, you know, you are everywhere and yet you're nowhere. You know, you kind of snap back into a reality. So, for me it's quite important that it has that. And you just see it like that, experience it like that.
Conceptualized it as a box rather than as for example, an oversized, cheaper postcard. Were you thinking in terms of Chinese scrolls, which are self-contained and you tend to view section by section and very rarely look at them as a whole, and then they're rolled up and put away again, so they're not on view to the public or permanently? They're something you get out and have an intimate moment with. Was that something you were conscious of?
No, not really. No, wasn't. No, didn't. I mean, all right. It's a red colour, right? And the title refers. I mean, yeah. Of course, they're trying to give the game away a bit. You know, it's a red colour, red box, right? It's China red. Eat bitterness is a Chinese phrase. We're giving the game away, but no, it wasn't meant to be red like that. No.
Tony, I come from certain economies, but do you think that this as it is about change in China? So knowing your background, right, over the last 20 years, you've lived...
20 years?
Yeah, you've lived in the Docklands, you've seen the change in the Docklands in 20 years, and now you're witnessing a similar change in China. And you've been a bit ambiguous about it. Is it, you know, as much as about you and your experience as it is about the Chinese experience?
I would never say this is about the Chinese experience. This is about my experience in over there. It's not. Yeah, no. I know what you're kind of, because you know we know each other. I know what you're saying. There's something there, but no, it's
so
not.
It might have influenced your judgment, though. I think.
Not sure about that.
So your experience in the Docklands.
No, but I see it's very two different worlds. So for me, you know, that somewhere else is another world and over here is a different world. So.
what if I put the prison in a slightly different way and say maybe there is the prison of your formation inside the doctrine, which is sort of seen. It's not a precondition, it's still there, it still comes back about that question about sometimes regeneration, sometimes movement, sometimes the unspoken, sometimes unfinished. I know you use the notion of process. I wondered whether you talk more about the different signatures one uses to map that prism of information. So I was uncomfortable about process being a kind of disappearance of place and timelessness, but rather trying to think of it, but trying to raise the question of timelessness in a different way. Is that what's going on? That preoccupation with a particular story, particular problematic.
Potentially. I mean, there's, you could link where I live now with somewhere over there and the things that are happening. And we talked a bit about the rapid modernization, capitalism, which we're all part of. I mean, you said different signatures, which is quite interesting. It's quite interesting, but you see it as different signatures. And that's maybe something that does override the different works that I do, and maybe something I'm not thinking about completely or literally, but happens. And the whole thing about timelessness. Obviously, the older you get, the more you realise it does, you know, time is obviously counting over, but, you know, you can only do what you want to do when you need to do it. My interpretation of it is, the language thing, I don't speak Chinese. In terms, I don't think I necessarily have a truer interpretation of that space. Yeah, my dual heritage, or however you want to term it, is specific in terms of Chineseness and Englishness.
I was only aware that you constantly use the term Taurus. You constantly repeat it, and I found it was interesting by constantly seeing yourself as Taurus. And Taurus, for me, had a particular resonance for me.
But that's the whole point. I mean, when I'm there, I'm a complete tourist. Mm-hmm. I may have been there 10 times before, but I haven't been to Shanghai before. Complete tourist. And the fact that I happen to be, my father happens to be Chinese, but from Hong Kong, which is also very different from, say, Shanghai, it does add some weight, or it does add some... Well, the knowledge that it adds is the fact that I've been to China before. That's all.
The pictures you take, though, they're anti-tourist pictures, aren't they? I mean, there are no way are they tourist pictures. I mean, you can't imagine anyone coming back from holiday with those pictures.
Well, I did. I mean, yeah, I mean, yeah, they're very much a back view, or a different view, maybe. Let's say a different view.
But they refuse exoticism. They refuse any sense of place, in a way.
Yeah, of course.
They are
yeah.
of a place, but they could be of anywhere.
Yeah.
And aesthetically also they're some way, and that also you are written into them subjectively, obviously. Mm. But your presence isn't apparent in any of those pictures.
Yeah, I mean, I think I wanted to get rid of any sense of this guy's somewhere down the line. There's some Chineseness there. I completely want to get rid of that. I really wasn't that interested in that. Of course, I was interested in that when I'm there. In one sense, I know. I'm interested in the kind of Chinese culture that I'm seeing, and maybe I think that I have more of a hold on that. But of course, I realise that when I'm there, I completely don't have any hold on it. Yeah, I'm just Joe Bloggs from England, you know. And that is important in the work, to try to not bring this up. It's not about my cultural sense, whatever that is.
Yeah.
It's not fixed. That's important, but it's not fixed. And of course, the view isn't fixed. And it changes all the time.
Do you want to say something?
Can you comment about the fact that you've made these images very precious?
Mm.
Aren't they very precious now?
Could be, yeah.
You hope.
They are like lovely images. And
the presentation of them is very beautiful, yeah.
Have you rendered them like into fetishes?
There might be some irony at play here. You know, they are very, they're beautifully boxed and produced.
Oh, but they are very beautiful.
can you take a box as a sweetening of the pill, in a sense?
Yeah.
I mean...
And that pill being ambiguous, that bitterness being...
Yeah, I mean, there's... I mean... When you package anything up, especially photography, photography packages the whole world up. You know, it presents this view, or views of worlds. And of course, because it's a photograph, like you said, it can be very beautiful.
But you like the tension? There is a lot of tension.
No, I do like tension.
Yeah. No, I mean the decay of the objects that you detail.
Or beautifying the decay.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of touched on the tension thing, yeah, earlier, yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, there's some sense. I mean, with any work, for me in particular, that's be some. The work Port of Call, there was irony written all over it, literally. the photographs with words, phrases across it. And that's important to me, some sense of irony, because, you know, we can all get very serious about things. And also, kind of like, I don't know. Yeah, I think I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Well, I think in the spirit of conversation, if there aren't any more burning questions, we'd like to invite you to join us for a wee drink in the bar at the back of the gallery later. I'd like to thank everybody for coming along tonight, and especially the staff at the Photographer's Gallery, who kindly allowed us to use the room tonight. Thank you, Brett, for just going out. Thanks very much. And especially thanks to Anthony and Julian for allowing us to be part of that conversation.
Yeah, yeah, thanks.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Just before you do run to the bar, Indra's just reminded me that we do have a few of the boxes here, but I think we're going to lay the prints out if you actually want to get a sense of the tactile nature of the project. Just here, but there'll be some gloves there too for you to handle it with. So we'll be here. Okay, thanks again.